And good morning once again, Grace Community. How are you doing this morning? All is well?
Excellent.
Excellent. Very good. And again, to you fathers out there, an extremely celebratory, happy Father's Day to you. Enjoy the day. Serve your family well. So, this morning, we're just going to talk for a few minutes specifically to the men this morning. So, ladies, two things. Don't totally check out because I think they shut down the coffee outside anyway. And the other thing is don't take copious notes. And then on Wednesday of the week, shove this in your husband's face and say, see, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Let other men come to your husband and say, see, this is what you're supposed to be doing. This is not meant to be a battering ram against men. Traditionally, Mother's Day services at many churches go something along like this. God created a heavenly host and he called them mothers. They do no wrong. Make sure that you serve them well. They've nurtured you, they've cared for you, and it's a very positive, uplifting, encouraging, wonderful ceremony. And there's gifts, and there's flowers, and you take mom out for brunch and those kind of things. And then when Father's Day comes around, guys, what happens? Yeah, bend over and get the swift kick for all the things that we're not doing right. We'll have a little bit of that today, okay? But I really believe that, yes, the responsibilities, the obligations, the paths that many moms are on, many ladies are on, they're difficult. And it's the same thing with men. We wanted to spend today to bring some encouragement, some truth to the men here this morning. Because we as men, we're on a journey. We're on a journey, all of us. Whether you understand it or not, we are on a journey. Now, the path that you are choosing to go on, men, is very different. It's the one that you've chosen to walk on. And it's a journey towards manhood. And you might be 60 years old this morning and you are still on that journey. You may be 4 and you're going to be going on that journey. And the question is that where does this journey of manhood, where is it going? Are there some real clear objectives for us to understand? Because in our culture, we place a high value on it. Because we use terms like, you know, hey, check in your man card. Well, when do you get your man card? When does a boy become a man? And why does it hurt so much when other men will point a finger and say, you're acting like a boy? What's the difference? When a young man does become a man, how did he get there? What did he have to do? And once he's there, what does he have to continue to do in order to keep that state of manhood on the journey that he is pursuing? There are many different paths. We're going to go over a couple of them because there are a lot of false paths. There are a lot of images. There are a lot of mirages out there that many men are following today. You may be on it today. You may find yourself on one of these paths. And what they are, many men are today are pursuing an image of manhood. It's not authentic. It's an image. It's like a mirage. And what our culture is saying and what many men are embracing is that they believe that, well, you know, a real man is an achiever. That we give respect and admiration. We say, you know what, that guy, he is a real man because he has a title. He has positions. He has huge responsibilities. The guy's got money. The guy's got stuff. The guy's got toys. He's obviously a man who can shake and bake, wheel and deal. He can get it done. That's a real man. And even when we go back down into our educational systems, you'll find many, many, many young men are holding this out as an ideal. They are going through an educational process with the goal of becoming an achiever, because once they become an achiever, they feel like they have arrived as a man. There's also the image that a real man is a lover. That a real man is the one who gets all the ladies. He's the one that's good looking. He's the one that all the ladies want to pay attention to. Many men believe, and they will teach their sons, that you become a man when you lose your virginity. When you get your first woman, whether it's your future wife or not. And many men are pursuing that. They gather numerous women around them. And then they use them. And they believe that that is what makes them a man. And it's reinforced over and over and over in our culture, whether it's in our movies or whether it's with the women of this culture that continue to propagate and reinforce that type of a message. The other thing is that many men believe that a real man is a fighter. He's confident. He's assured of himself. He can step into an arena and he can look in a room and say, you know what, I can lick any man in this room. He acts tough. He talks tough. He likes to use crude language. He's a bully. He's a thug. And he believes that that is how he earns respect and how people will say, well, that's a real man. Because you don't want to mess with him. You don't want to cross him. You don't want to get in his way. Because if you do, you're going to be on the receiving end of something that's not pleasant. And there are many other images. There are many other paths. But I think that these are some real common ones. And what happens is that when we don't have a clear understanding of what genuine, authentic manhood is, and there's a vacuum that occurs, rushing into that vacuum come these false images, these lies. And we as men, we start to embrace them from a young age. We start to passionately embrace them as young men. And we hold on to them for dear life as older men. It's a journey that many men find themselves on. But this journey that many men find themselves on, it's a path that sometimes is called the rat race. The rat race, racing after an image. And the reality of it is that we find men are racing for a prize that really isn't available. They're pursuing achievement, and they're pursuing love, and they're pursuing becoming a fighter. And what they're looking for is things like, I want satisfaction. I want to know that my life is significant, that it's really counting for something. And what I'm looking for is I'm looking for contentment, and I want my life to have purpose and meaning and legacy and those kind of things. And they're racing for those kind of things, and they're trying to find it solely in achievement and many women and being a thug and a bully, or just trying to come across as being one that's tough and has his act all together. And they're not finding these kind of things. The reality is they're finding that there really isn't a prize at all in the rat race. There's only an image of a prize. And as many of you young men are starting to find out that nagging question that's in the back of your mind, and as many older men are finding out, is that, you know what, I've chased an image. There really was no prize. And so it leaves me with questions. I've spent most of my life pursuing this, not getting what I thought I would get. And I've got questions. Or unfortunately, I've got casualties. I've got a 401k retirement plan, and I've got the admiration of my coworkers, but my family is a disaster. I've got regrets. I've pursued retirement all my life, and I find out that after 3 weeks of chasing a little white ball around the golf course, I'm just not quite satisfied. Have I wasted my life, my time? Have I invested my family in something that does not satisfy and is nothing more than a vapor? You see, guys, because the reality in the rat race, there is no winner. There's only runners. There's only men who keep running and running and running and running. The hamster in the wheel, going faster, but never moving, never making progress. Solomon, in the Old Testament, God say, what's your one request? And he said, make me wise. And the scriptures say that God made him the wisest of all men. And this is what he says. He says, there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. That's the rat race, guys. That is the many paths that men are pursuing, trying to become an authentic, genuine man, trying to find the satisfaction, contentment, and purpose and meaning, and they're not finding it. And they're finding that at the end of this path, I thought it seemed right, but it only brought me death. So the question is that if this is so prevalent, why in the world do we do it? Why, guys? Why do we find ourselves continually struggling to do that? And I'm sure that there's a lot of reasons. You know, I've sat down, I've thought about this a lot, and it's like, why do we as men continue to pursue these kind of endeavors when we sense the emptiness in our own souls and we see the casualties and regrets and questions of those who have gone on before us? Why do we continue to be like the hamster and get on the wheel and start running? I don't know if it's profound, but I think it's because it's all that we know. That's all we've been taught. That's all we've seen. We know that the hamster wheel doesn't go anywhere, but we climb in anyway. And so the question comes up, is there a better way? Is there a path that leads to life? And the answer is, of course, yes. There is a journey to authentic, genuine manhood, and it's found in the scriptures. It's found in the scriptures. Men, let me share this with you. The only way that we can really find out what it really, truly means to be a man is not to seek the counsel of another man, but is to seek the counsel and the wisdom of God himself. The one who calls himself Father, and the one who created us, and the one who can redeem us, and the one who chooses to let us walk with him. In 1 Kings, we're going to take a look at David talking with his son Solomon. And this is what the scripture says. It says, as David's time to die drew near, he charged Solomon, his son, saying, I'm going the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and show yourself a man. Show yourself a man. This is probably the only place in the Old Testament that you will find a description of what it means to be a man. If you take a look at this, Solomon or David is on his deathbed. He says, as David's time to die drew near. David is on his deathbed and he calls his son Solomon to him. And he's going to have a conversation. You know, it's many times when someone is on their deathbed that which is truly important, vital, critical, number one central priority comes out. If you've ever had the honor of being by someone when they are at their last days on their deathbed and to have a conversation with them, it is profound, it can be sweet, it can be troubling, because what really is on a man's heart when he is on his deathbed comes out. David is going to die, and he wants to give his final words of instruction, encouragement, and a charge to his son, Solomon. And he says, my son, be strong and be a man. Be strong and be a man. Well, what could David have told his son? Because Solomon might be there just saying, what does it mean to be a man, Dad? What does it mean to be a man? You see, David could have told his son, be an achiever. Go out and be an achiever, because David was an achiever. Huge. He was a king. You know, case closed there. Not many guys get to do that. He was a king, okay, of a nation. He was a general of an army. He was involved in building cities. David had great wealth at his disposal. He was a huge achiever. He could have told his son to do that. But that's what it means to be a man. He could have told his son, go out and be a lover, because David was a lover. David had somewhere between 7 or 9 wives. He had a lot of concubines. The scriptures say that David was a man after God's own heart. He was repentant, and he needed to be repentant, because David had a problem keeping his pants up. Just saying. That's what the scriptures say. Not maybe those words, but that's what they're saying. Okay? David had a problem. David was a lover. David was a ladies' man. The scriptures say in 1 Samuel that one of the times David went out to war. He was not king at that time. Saul was king. David went out to war. He came back, and the scriptures say that all the ladies danced and sang. That when David came back, they said, King Saul, he has slain his thousands, but David, oh, he slays his 10,000. I mean, groupies. They're groupies, you know, even at that point in time. David knew it, you know. I mean, you come in on your chariot and just say, look at all the ladies. And they're talking about me. Yeah, David was a ladies' man. David was a musician. You know. That just about, you know, seals the deal right there. Ladies love the musicians, you know. So think about it. Okay, you younger ladies, what have you got on your iPod? You got tunes, you know. You know, have you downloaded one of my sermons? No. You know. Doubt it. It's just not. You know, you go, wow, did you hear that message you got on your iPod? They look at you and just go, what? No, I've got these guys on my iPod. Yeah, he was a ladies' man. He could have told Solomon to be a ladies' man. The more we know about Solomon's life later on, David didn't need to tell Solomon to be a ladies' man. Solomon did that quite disastrous all on his own. He could have told his son to be a man, be a fighter, because David was a fighter. David was a mighty warrior. The scriptures talk about his army. They were called David's mighty men. These were renowned men of warfare, valor, courage, guys who could throw arrows or spears with both hands, guys who could use the sling with both hands, guy who would run down in the middle of winter into a pit where a lion was so he could kill it. These were guys of great valor. These were warriors. And these were guys who said, I want to be with David. I want David to lead me. I want to be part of that group. These were all stars. And they volunteered to follow David. David was a fighter. He was not a weak man. The scriptures talk about an incident where he came to King Saul because he wanted to marry one of Saul's daughters. Saul hated David, and he wanted to see David dead. So he gave David this charge. He says, you want to marry my daughter? There's a dowry. You bring me the foreskins of 100 Philistine soldiers. Don't get upset. It's in the book. Okay? Now, guys, let me ask you this. If some guy meets you on the street that you don't know and says, I want your foreskin, what's your response going to be? Something like, over my dead body? Exactly. David brought back a bag of 200 Philistine foreskins. The man was a warrior and he was a fighter. And he could have told his son, be an achiever, be a lover, be a fighter. But what was David, what were his final thoughts towards his son? What was really important on David's heart towards his son? What does the man who has it all tell another guy how to be a man? This is what he told his son. And this is the charge to us, men. He told his son this. He says, keep the charge of the Lord your God. Walk in his ways. Keep his statutes, his commandments, his ordinances, his testimonies, according to what is written in the law of Moses. He didn't say go out and achieve and fight and love. He said you draw near to God and you keep his commandments. He says you be a keeper of the charge. A keeper of the charge. The word keep there is literally a vow. It means something that I will persevere in and I will protect. And a charge is an ordinance, an obligation, a service. David is telling his son that when it comes to you as a man and your relationship with God, if you want to be strong and show yourself a man, you find it by drawing a line in the sand and saying, this is where I stand. I make a vow, an obligation, and a service to the Most High God that I am with him and what he says go. His statutes, his commandments, his ordinances, his testimonies, whatever is written in the law of Moses, the scriptures, he says, that is what you anchor your life to. That is what an authentic, genuine pursuit of manhood is all about. This is what one brother writes. He says, you cannot follow Jesus and remain the same. The journey itself will change you forever, not only your priorities, but your passions. It alters not only your direction, but your desires. It transforms not only your actions, but your values. It makes you just like Christ and unlike anyone else. It is nothing less than leaving the fake for the real. There is great risk in abandoning the artificial in pursuit of the authentic. Yet, if we've never known the real thing, men, listen to this. If we've never known the real thing, it is easy to understand why we are mesmerized with the best versions of the imitation. That is profound and that hits hard. Because so often, men, we are mesmerized. We are mesmerized by this world's best versions of the imitation of what it means to be a man. To be a man. I recall my early years here at the University of Iowa. I just got saved right before I graduated high school, and I came here as a young Christian knowing very little. I spent most of my days in the athletic locker room surrounded by many football players who wanted to be achievers, lovers, and fighters. These were my peers. This is what I found myself immersed in. My studies revolved around people who wanted to pursue titles and careers for money. And I found myself as a young Christian going to a small church in Iowa City that had some genuine, authentic men. They were not great in the world's eyes, but they were great servants of the Most High God. Men who would talk passionately about their wives not degrading. Men who would embrace children and encourage young men who had little kids and just get delight. Men who would enjoy and embrace their responsibilities as a man in the marketplace. Men who loved God, knew the scriptures, spoke confidently, walked with assurance, walked with satisfaction, joy in their life. And it didn't take long for me to realize that there was one area of my life where I was truly being surrounded by men, and there was truly an area where I found myself walking with boys who were pursuing an image of men. These men made a tremendous impact in my life. And I said, you know, when I grow up, I want to be like these men who love Jesus. I see the fruit of walking with God. I see the fruit of men who keep the charge of the Most High God. And they walk with Him. And no longer being mesmerized by the best versions of the imitation. To have Jesus transform your life, guys, your passions, your actions, your values, your thoughts, and to know that you are walking on a path of genuine, authentic manhood instead of blindly, aimlessly walking down the path that eventually is a path of destruction. The substance of authentic manhood, gentlemen, is when a man anchors his life and his soul in God and in His purposes. That's what it means to be a genuine man. Authentic manhood, it's a man that lives his life that's not consistent with these false images of manhood that the culture has, but rather he is set free. He is set free so that he can live a life that is now consistent with the identity that he has in Jesus Christ. We become keepers of the charge of the Most High God. Whereas I think many men, as they think, they go, okay, can I get some specifics here? How does this kind of play out? Well, David continued. He said this. He says, keep the statutes, be a keeper of the charge, keep his ordinances, everything that is written in the law of Moses. And he says, that you may succeed in all that you do and wherever you turn. The word succeed here means to accomplish that which is intended and what is set out to do. That you may accomplish the things that you are sent out to do in all that you do and wherever you go. Let me ask you men this question. Where are you going? And what are you doing? What do you find yourself doing? Many of you guys say, well, I'm going home. Who are you going home to? I'm going home to my wife and my kids. Where are you going after that? Well, I'm going to work later on. Where else are you going? Well, I'm going, I don't know, my house, and it's in a neighborhood. And where's your neighborhood? Well, it's in this city. This is where I'm going. What are you doing? Well, I'm working, and I'm interacting with people. When we become keepers of the charge, men, all of those areas become extremely significant. And the scriptures, the ordinances, the statutes, the commandments, the testaments, everything that is written speaks to our responsibilities with all of those things, plus more. And what God wants to do is not only did God create you at one time, but in our sinful state, He redeems us through the blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. He rips out a heart of stone, puts in a heart of flesh, takes us from being spiritually dead to spiritually alive, and He says, let's walk together. And in these areas of responsibility that He has given us, He says, let's go through this together. I have direction. I have specifics. I have truth to give you so that you can succeed in your marriage and you can find satisfaction and contentment and that you can find out that, yes, I am being called to a place in the marketplace. And it's there that you can go ahead and not only know the gospel and speak the gospel, but you can live the gospel and you can impact lives and you can raise your children and you can discuss things with your neighbors and you can serve others and you can be part of a church body. And that in these kind of things, when we become keepers of the charge, we find out that, yes, we are setting out and we are accomplishing the things that our master has for us, and we are finding that there is a life that is not characterized by defeat, confusion, questions, casualties, regret, but it is characterized by success. Because what God wants done, He's allowing us to be part of. He's allowing us to be part of. You see, men, there are worthy endeavors to achieve. Yes, God will set us free from ourselves, from our sin, from the culture's definition of where we should go. He sets us free from that, and in our identity in Christ, yes, there are worthy endeavors that He has called us to achieve. Yes, He calls us to become great sacrificial lovers of people. We do not pursue an image of achievement, but we are in the endeavor of some genuine, significant achievement. Things that matter, impacting people. Work all of a sudden has a calling to it. There are people that He brings into our lives and we love them. And we find out that there are noble causes to fight for. We don't have to talk tough. We don't have to be the bully. We don't have to be the thug. That's easy to do. But we become the rebels with a cause. That there are noble things that the Scriptures lay out, noble things that are dear to the heart of God. And we can fight for those things. We engage against the forces of spiritual darkness that want to come against our families, against our teenage kids, against our home, against our church. We stand up for the widow and the orphan. When we struggle with sin, we don't tiptoe with it, we fight it. I've had a young man that I've had conversations with over the last couple years. And he was very obvious. He just goes, look, he's a young man. He goes, I'm struggling with lust and pornography. I said, okay, that's 100% of us. And he goes, I feel like I'm losing the battle. Do you have suggestions? I said, here's what we'll do. And let me know how things are going. And we'd communicate occasionally about things. Pull out the hanky. recently, he gave me this box. So what? What do they call it? Okay, here we go. Brain cramp. iPod. Sorry. Dementia setting in. It's an iPod. This guy get me an iPod? I don't have an iPod. Don't really want an iPod, but if he got me, wow. I opened it up, and it was his iPod. It was his iPod. On the receiving end of a ball-peen hammer. Smashed. I got to do this at least once, a message. And he talked about, he cleared his throat, and then he began to tell me, it's my motorcycle imitation. Anyway, he told me that he said the enemy's had a stronghold. It's taken casualties. And he wants to fight. And I was speechless. I was just speechless. If you would have come to me and say, I'm having trouble because every once in a while, this guy was not an addict. He goes, every once in a while, yeah, my iPod, you know, I'll dial down some stuff. I wouldn't say, bust it. Say, let's try to, I said, you have chosen the way of a warrior. You are a fighter. You are a man who is ready to fight for the noble things in this war that you are facing. You have drawn a line in the sand, and with outward expression and of great value to you, you have said, this is where I stand. I'm so proud of this guy. I'm so proud of him. You see, we don't become passive, weak. Jesus saved us. He took away our sin. He did not take away our spine. There are noble things that we stand up for and say, this is right, this is wrong, and I'm going to invest and I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to do what's right for my family, for my kids, for my wife, for this church, for this place where God has put me. And this is where I choose to live the gospel. And when necessary, I fight. I stand up for what is right. The godly man who is present and engaged. Mark this, men, present and engaged. In all of his God-given responsibilities, can be used by God to radically transform every environment that he finds himself in. We see that in the scriptures, and we see that in the lives of other men who walk with God in their God-given responsibilities and take serious about being a keeper of the charge, a follower of Christ, and wants to be used by God. And it impacts many, 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 many people. That's what he's calling you to, and that's what he's calling me to. But it doesn't stop there. David goes on to tell his son this. He says, so that the Lord may carry out his promise which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons are careful of their way to walk before me in truth with all of their heart, with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. David is telling his son about the covenant that God had given David, the Davidic covenant, which says, I will give you land, I will give you seed, I will give you blessing, and this is there, and it's true, and I'm going to give it to you, but to enjoy and to experience the blessing of this land and of this kingdom, it is dependent upon your obedience. And we see through the history of Israel, when they obeyed, there was prosperity. When they disobeyed, there was judgment. And he's telling Solomon the same thing. He goes, look, God promised us that if we walk with him in truth, he said, we're going to have a king on the throne. We're going to have a king on the throne. What does this mean to us, men? We, like Solomon, like David, like men, we have to understand that we are part of something that is bigger than ourselves. As men called to Jesus, part of his kingdom, and part of what he wants to use to influence this world. Men long to be part of something bigger than themselves. A cry in many men's heart is that, look, I don't want my life to be all about me. but I desperately am looking for something that I can give my total life to. I can sum it up in a word: Jesus. It's Jesus. Men, we are part of something that's bigger than ourselves. Men, others are counting on us for the choices and the decisions that we make. When we are keepers of the charge, when we are holding fast and walking in truth with Christ, what happens is that others are benefited. When husbands walk with Jesus, wives are benefited. When dads walk with Jesus, children are benefited. When men walk with Jesus, churches become stronger. When men walk with Jesus and embrace their responsibilities in the business world and in the marketplace, things get protected. Truth has fruit. Others will be impacted on the choices that you and I make. And we have to also understand that God has intentionally placed you and I where we are at right now, in this place, at this time in history. By His sovereign decree, you are here at this time in history, in this place, in the state of Iowa. He's placed you here. And just like He chose to place Solomon as the successor to David, David was saying, in essence, like, Solomon, my time is going. The baton is in your hands now. Others are counting on you for you to walk with God, for you to be a keeper of the charge, for you to be a genuine, authentic man, and to impact this nation for the name of God. David was saying, in essence, Solomon, it's your turn now. It's your turn now. Guys, there are young ladies, there are ladies here who grew up in a home, and there was a time when her daddy walked her down the aisle and you were standing up in the front. In essence, he was handing her to you and saying, I've done what I could. It's your turn now. You've watched other people, maybe friends, go to the hospital with a pregnant wife and come home with a child. And then you get to do the same, and God is saying, it's your turn now. There are many men who have been in the history of this church, who have been in leadership positions and have tried to impact this church, and now new leadership is being raised up and brought new men. And it's our turn now. And what you cannot do, men, is in all these areas of responsibility where God has placed you, do not take your responsibilities lightly. Because, guys, it's our turn now. It's our turn. I've said this before, and I want to say it again. Imagine with me, if you will, a church that has an abundance of spiritually mature men, not just a bunch of guys, okay, a bunch of spiritually mature men who are passionate about their walk with Jesus. They are keepers of the charge. They are serious with their vows and their commitments that they make. What would that look like? I think one of the things is that you find that young men are encouraged to walk in that way. And we saw earlier that men want to be trained. They want to find out more about what does it mean to be a keeper of the charge? What does it mean to be a man? And that's part of it. And then we also, I think, what does it also look like is that men rise up to lead. Men rise up to lead. To become shepherds, pastors, elders. It's a natural progression of the journey of a man. This morning, we're going to call the elders and we're going to call Dave Kirk up. Dave's been with us for a little over a year. Dave has proven himself to become qualified as an elder, as a pastor of Grace Community Church. And let me just read real quickly. From 1 Timothy. It's a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, that's pastor, elder, Scriptures say it's a fine work he desires to do. An elder then must be above reproach, husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine, pugnacious, gentle. He's uncontentious. He's free from the love of money. Says he must manage his own household well. Keeps his children under control with dignity. If a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? He's not a new convert, lest he become conceited, fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil. He must have a good reputation with those outside the church so that he may not fall into reproach in the snare of the devil. When you look at that list of qualifications, people, they're all talking about aspects of spiritual maturity. It's not talking about talents, giftedness, education, longevity. These are men who have had God touch them, have walked with God, and they're bearing the fruits of spiritual maturity. And when a man desires to use his life to influence others in a local church setting, that's what pastors and elders are. And so we're going to call up Dave. We're going to call up the other elders who are here, and we're going to commission Dave this morning. My encouragement to you men is this. Who will be the future pastors and elders of Grace Community Church in the next 10 to 15 years? They're here. They're here. Men who walk with God, take serious their vow of being a keeper of the charge, manage their household well, walk humbly with God, and who desire to impact others for the name and the cause of Jesus Christ. So.